purpose. It is the foundation upon which what we do and how we do it rest. It is the force, the motivation for why we do things. It calls into question the search for meaning and fulfillment in one's life and how a person goes about living their life. And it is a paramount issue in the growth and development of every child. Here is Jennifer Jones of KGO Radio San Francisco with a leading expert on purpose and children.
Professor William Damon is the director of the Center on Adolescence at Stanford University and one of the world's leading experts on adolescence. While at Brown University, he was the director of the Center for the Study of Human Development. He is the founding editor of the series New Directions for Child and Adolescent Development and the editor-in-chief of the 5th and 6th editions of the Handbook of Child Psychology. Professor Damon has taken on tough issues in human development, including moral commitment and purpose. He is the author of 6 books, including his latest, which is due out in April, The Path to Purpose, Helping Our Children Find Their Calling in Life. Professor Damon, thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
So the focus of your new book is purpose, but that's a pretty broad topic. Can you tell us what is purpose?
Well, purpose actually itself is very broad. It's a broad, long-term goal, a kind of a super goal that drives other shorter-term goals. For example, you might have a purpose of something highly noble, such as I'd love to cure cancer if I'm a doctor, or I'd love to find a solution to poverty in the world. Or it might be a more personal purpose, such as I want to build a wonderful family, raise children. But these are long-term kinds of goals, and they give you a direction in life, and they're highly meaningful. And the two fundamental elements of purpose are, number one, they have to be meaningful. You have to really care about them. They have to matter to you. And number two, it's something that makes a difference in the world. There's a consequence to somebody beyond the self. And as I said, it's a long-term goal. We have a lot of short-term goals in life. Maybe we want to get a ticket to the movie next weekend or find a way to get a parking place in town tomorrow or something like that. But these are goals. Purposes are long-term. They're highly motivating, and they give you a direction throughout long periods of your life.
So the way you're describing purpose, it's not necessarily just getting the tangible things, but it's moral and it's internal.
Exactly. And it may be something that you can never totally accomplish. A lot of the heroic purposes, people that would love to struggle for world peace, for example, they kind of know that by the time they've finished up in life, there's not going to be total peace in the world. But maybe you can contribute something to that. Maybe you can create a little bit of a better climate. And so a purpose is not always something that you finish doing, but it does give you a great and very organized sense of where you're going in life.
I think I need more purpose already. Now, The Path to Purpose, your book, Helping Our Children Find Their Calling in Life. What made you want to study purpose in children?
Well, I had been for many, many years studying things like moral commitment and good work. And a lot of the work that I had done had been with adults. And I had met and interviewed some just amazing people, people who might have dedicated 3 or 4 decades of their lives to building hospitals in Juarez, Mexico for poor kids or things like that. And I always wondered, first of all, what makes them tick? But even more importantly, how did they get to where they are? How did they get to be this kind of a person? And in order to really understand that, you have to go back, I think, early in life and try to understand what are the formative influences on young people. And so in the book, The Path to Purpose, I'm taking a look at kids between the ages of about 12 and 26, when they're not really kids anymore, of course, but they're still very much in transition. They're still developing. And we're taking a look at how young people develop their sense of a calling in life, their sense of what they're dedicated to, what they believe in. And we're taking a look at kids that find it and kids that don't find it.
And why is it so important to find it?
Well, for the person, it absolutely makes all the difference as to whether you have a life that is resilient, whether you can kind of get from one point to the next in life across all the ups and downs that everybody has with a sense of forward movement, a sense of direction, and not crumble every time something goes wrong because you don't understand why you're even why try, why bother. I mean, I think a lot of the problems these days, especially, I think if there's a problem in our time, it would be a problem of emptiness, of kind of spiritual emptiness, that people just wonder what they're here for, what are they doing in life. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have an answer to that, you're kind of fragile. Mm-hmm. You know, then if something goes wrong and things don't break your way, you don't have any way to bounce back because you can't get beyond that just feeling miserable. And people with purpose are very willing to put up with hard times and confusion and doubt because they know what they believe in. They know where they're going.
Well, it sounds to me like purpose sort of then leads to a better feeling of self-worth.
Absolutely. You can answer the question, why? You know, why, why am I bothering and what am I trying to accomplish? And that gives you a sense that there is some reason that you're here. And it gives you both a sense of self-worth and also a sense that you matter. You matter to the world. Which, of course, is the ultimate sense of self-worth, sense that you matter. But you're not self-absorbed. You're not just sitting around saying, I'm terrific, I'm great. It's not self-esteem. It's something really beyond that. It's something that you care about other things in the world beyond yourself. And because of that caring, you avoid all the problems of being overly self-absorbed, which, of course, as I said, is, I think, one of the big problems of our time.
What about four children? I mean, a lot of times, I think without even knowing it, kids can sometimes be a little selfish and a little self-absorbed because it's all they know. They know that that's their blanket or that's their toy or whatever it happens to be. So what kind of purpose do children have, and do they get it? Do they get that they are looking beyond themselves when they have found purpose?
Well, you're absolutely right that that's where kids start off, and that is the role of adults. That's why we are actually needed, we meaning adults, to give kids some guidance, because there's a lot of things you can do with a young child to communicate that you can make a difference in the world. And that ranges from something that used to be called in the old days chores. And whenever I say that word, you know, everyone thinks I'm some kind of a horrible traditionalist, I suppose. But kids can actually contribute things around the home, and it's not child labor, folks. It's, you know, it's doing things like maybe watering the plants or helping mom empty the dishwasher. And doing little things like that give a child a sense that it's not all about me and I can help out. And that's one thing adults can do. There's lots of other things that teachers and other grown-ups can do to communicate to kids that they're part of a world. And, of course, they're really important, and we're here to help them, and their feelings are really important. But other people's feelings are important, too. And if you can spend an afternoon reading to your grandmother who's lonely or something like that for her sake, that's good for the child, too, to experience that.
Professor, I'm glad to hear earlier you'd mentioned that kids, you range them up to 26 years old, and I live with my 24-year-old brother, so now I can give him chores and feel as though I'm giving him some purpose. I love this.
Yeah. Okay,
well, let's talk about socioeconomic groups. Does it make a difference on, say, if you have a poor child, is it tougher or easier for them to find purpose versus a child who has a lot of money?
Well, you know, one of the interesting findings from our research that that I write about in the book The Path to Purpose is that we do not get significant differences among different socioeconomic groups. We find kids from all locations and backgrounds who are thriving and full of purpose, and we also find kids from every possible background who are drifting. And that includes both the from the affluent suburbs and from the disadvantaged inner cities. So it doesn't seem to be the case that that money provides purpose, I'll put it that way, in child rearing. I do think that obviously there are some real difficulties with that young people have growing up in disadvantaged backgrounds, and A lot of the schools need to be improved and all of that. But on the issue of finding meaning and purpose in life, we haven't found any difference on that dimension.
Well, because I would guess you could have all the money in the world, but if your parents weren't engaging and sort of let you just drift, then that wouldn't help you. And at the same time, if you were very poor and maybe you had teachers or somebody who were able to step in, if maybe your parents had to work, both of them full time, but you had a wonderful teacher who gave you some sort of purpose, I guess it wouldn't make a difference then.
And that's exactly what we've found in our research. And we have found examples of both types of kids that you've mentioned. And that's exactly what I write about in The Path to Purpose.
So what happens to those children, though, who are drifting and aren't able to find purpose?
Well, that's a really good question. And I don't have the ultimate answer to that, at least in every single child's case. I can't at this point predict whether a child who has yet to find purpose or is searching is going to move forward or stall. I do know some of the conditions that help young people who are searching or drifting, and they include having someone take them under their wing, somebody that's a bit inspirational, a mentor of some kind that's doing something that really galvanizes the young person's attention. That's really helpful. And having support from the family is really helpful. And having a chance to actually experiment and experience some work that is leading somewhere, having an opportunity to, whether it be, you know, work for a local newspaper or help out at the local grocery store or something that, or I mean, we've found kids who have been in fast food restaurants who are lucky enough to have a mentor as a manager who says, you know, you're not just here to serve people hamburgers, you're here to put a smile on the customer's face.
Yeah.
And the kid has a sense of meaning about that. And so some spark goes off and they come alive. So we know some of the conditions, but whether or not a young person will find those conditions is something that I can't predict. You hope that they'll have the opportunity to find them and that the adults will provide the right kind of guidance.
Do you have children who just don't care about finding it?
Yes. A number of the kids we've studied say things such as, oh, well, you know, I don't know, apathy, it seems to work for me all right. what's the big deal about having goals? You know, I'm having a good time. We get a lot of kids like that.
What do you do? How do you motivate them?
Well, at this point, I only write about them. So I actually, I don't have a silver bullet for how to convince that kind of young person that they'd really be better off trying to accomplish something. But I do know that the kids that eventually grow out of that are kids that, number one, get some sense of what the rewards are for moving forward and believing in something and developing goals. And usually they get that understanding by observing someone that has that kind of life. And also, on the downside of things, kids can be exposed to negative examples of people that have really gotten in trouble or really have floundered in life and have learned from those negative examples that this is not a very good way to live your life.
What about public versus private schools? Did that make a difference at all?
We have not seen a difference, but we haven't had a whole lot of private schools. We've had a couple of private schools that we've looked at in our sample, but most of our work has been done with public school kids.
Have you found public school children to have purpose?
Oh, absolutely, but not all of them. In fact, in terms of the numbers, we find about 1 out of 5 kids, about 20% of kids, are absolutely thriving and are full of purpose. About 55%, which is the largest group, have figments of purpose. They have some maybe big idea, or maybe they've tried out a few things, but no real realistic plan. And maybe it's a romantic idea that doesn't really connect with anything that could possibly happen. And so we don't know which way they're going. We hope that they will develop something realistic and keep up with it. And the rest of the kids, which is about 25%, are the kids I mentioned before, which are kids that are really drifting and don't seem to be even looking or caring at this point.
Well, of those kids who are really thriving and have found purpose, what are they doing?
Well, some of them are so amazing. I mean, they just blow you away. We have some examples in my book of, for example, one kid at age 12 got really troubled by a presentation in his classroom about African kids that don't have enough water to drink because they just don't have the drinking wells. Mm-hmm. And the presentation said, you know, it only costs $70 to build a well. It's a shame we can't get it. So this boy saved up his allowance and saved up the $70, went to see the woman who made the presentation. She said, oh, gee, I'm sorry. You know, I guess I was wrong. It actually cost $2,000. That just got him more active. And so he started raising money from his friends and his parents. Anyway, to make a long story short, this kid who I profile in my book has started a foundation now to build drinking wells in Africa. They've raised $2 million. He's been over to Africa several times. He's now 16 or 17. And it's an ongoing venture. He's a social entrepreneur.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and we have a number of kids. I have a dozen kids that are just off the charts like this that we've found that I profile in the book who are so astonishing. They kind of make you wonder where they come from. But, you know, in a lot of ways, they're normal kids. It's just that they got really excited about something.
Now, is that helpful or hurtful maybe to the kids who are in that 55% who have, you know, kind of some lofty purpose, but they just don't know how quite to make it work? Because if you see maybe your classmate doing something really wonderful on one hand, I think maybe that would motivate you. On the other hand, right, you might see how hard it was or how difficult it was to get to this point. And so then could you possibly fall to the other side as well?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And that's actually one of the reasons I wrote the book in the way I did. Because what I'm trying to demonstrate is that the kids that are really extraordinary are not a whole different species. Mm-hmm. And there isn't a gene for purpose that they inherited or something like that. And they actually did it in a gradual, kind of normal way, with, you know, the kind of mistakes that kids make, young kids, and they just kept at it and recovered, and they got a lot of support from family and friends and that kind of thing. And the message really is that anyone can do this. Anyone can have purpose. And I do think when you're talking about the 55%, exactly the way teachers and parents and other adults should interact with them is to say, look, you know, this is not a matter of something heroic or out of the ordinary or something that is impossible. It's something that anybody can do. Anybody can make a contribution towards the greater good of the world. And you can make mistakes and still keep going. And, you know, everyone has downtimes and lazy moments, and that's all fine. We're human beings. And that's the way you've got to work with kids, not in the sense of you got to be perfect, you got to be, or you're not like these kids or like these people that do amazing things.
I would like to see that just going into society as a whole, not just for children,
yeah,
but shoot, I'd like to see that implemented in the workplace and at home and, you know, out at a restaurant. I mean, you'd love to see people going beyond themselves.
Exactly. And everyone can do it. And it's not only good for the society and you're being a good citizen to do it, it's really important for your own mental health.
That's right. Professor Damon, thank you so much. This has been a great interview.
Sure. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
We've just heard how important it is for a child to have purpose in their life. It is a foundation, a framework from which that young person operates in the world. Now, Joel, how does this issue of purpose relate to kids who will be attending the Arete school?
Well, you know, Martin, this is, I think, is at the heart of the issue of any kind of learning experience or any learning environment is, you know, the kid in the back of his or her mind is going, why am I here? Yeah. Why am I doing this? You know, and if it's fulfilling to that child and touches their heart as much, if not more, than their head, then that child's going to want to be there. And so the mission of the Arete School of Sport, Culture, and Wellness is to send forth into the world intrinsically motivated, self-actualized citizens who care for other beings and their surroundings as much as they do themselves. Mm-hmm. Because as Dr. Damon was talking about, it isn't just about doing things for yourself, but people find purpose in doing things for others and in carrying causes that benefit other people. So one of the guiding principles of the Arete School is stewardship. Mm-hmm. And so the kids are going to be practicing stewardship throughout the time that all their years that they'll be at the Arete School. And that helps fulfill the mission of sending these kids out into the world to care for other beings and their surroundings as much as they do themselves. And at the same time, we're going to make sure that the kids become what, as we have in the mission statement, self-actualized. They have come as close as they can to fulfilling their own potential. And now they're able to take this out into the world, not only for their own sake, but for the sake of others. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
the bigger picture. Of course, when you're tied into something like that, that's highly motivating and committed.
It's very fulfilling. You know, it's here in America, it's we the people, not me the person.
Yeah.
And so it isn't about me. We're turning that M upside down and making it a we. And I think it's important in our culture, especially where things are today, for people to know that we're not just here for ourselves, mm-hmm. we're here for other people. You know, it was the teacher Hillel who said, if I am not for myself, then who will be for me? And if I'm only for myself, then what am I?
Yeah.
So this is a perspective that we want our kids at the Arete School coming away with, and we hope people will want to support this perspective in any school setting, and in this case, in particular, the Arete School. And they can do that. They can support this by clicking donate just below the screen here and making a contribution to the Arete School.